This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation this week with Fred Roberts, 89 years old of Ogden, Utah. I want to thank Mike Turner, chairman of Utah Honor Flight, for connecting me with Fred. Utah Honor Flight took its first contingent of veterans in October 2013 and has since flown two other groups of World War II vets to Washington, D.C. to see their memorial. In fact, that's Utah Honor Flight's motto, their memorial, our mission. It's part of the National Honor Flight Network. There's a hub in every area where Hometown Heroes is heard. So to find the one near you, go to honorflight.org. We're going to talk about that trip as Fred experienced it. But first, we need to hear the story of how Fred, after surviving some close calls in the Pacific on the destroyer USS Putnam, how he met his wife of 65 years now, Mary.
When I got out of the Navy, I went to work, and then they used to have dances. Big bands in the Bay Area. They had the Sweets Ballroom. They had Sands Ballroom. They had the El Patio in San Francisco. So I met this guy, and he used to, there was a whole group of them that would go to these dances. And you didn't dance with anybody else but within this group because they had the women in too, you know. And so I started going to these dances, and so I would go to dances six nights a week.
Wow.
And then on the seventh night, I went to the show, by the way, and I broke the routine. And Mary had a friend. I'd been going about 2 years, and Mary had a friend named Connie, and I had taken her out several times, but nothing serious. And so one day, Connie brought Mary up to the dance. So I saw Mary. I just liked her, you know. But she wouldn't go out with me because she said I was kind of nutty, too crazy at the time, you know, just like the rest of them guys. So she came up one night, and she was sitting there, and they had this bench. And I just walked over and sat down beside her, put my head in my in her lap, and started talking to her.
Pretty bold move.
I was desperate. So anyhow, Connie says, "Oh, don't worry, Mary. It's just only Fred." So then we started going together, and I think we went together 3 months, wasn't it? 3 months, and a preacher came and said he needed some money, and so he says, "I'll marry you for $10." So that's.
Here comes that sense of humor coming out again.
So anyhow, we didn't really propose or anything, did we? We just decided to go to a church, huh? We just decided to go to church and get married, and that's what we did. No big hullabaloo about it. We just loved each other, right?
And 65 years later, you're still going.
Yeah, she is.
What's the secret? I think there are a lot of people out there who say, man, I'd love to have our marriage last 65 years. You have any big words of wisdom for us?
I do. One thing, like I say, I wasn't the most stable guy after I got nervous. I think I was having some problems. So when we got married, Mary's the one, and she saved my life, I think. I tell people, I don't mind telling them, she saved my life. We just kind of talked about things, you know. We never really got into big bad stuff as far as a marriage goes, you know. And Mary's been understanding, and she's held out, and she changed me, you know, from what I was.
And I don't want to pry, but when you say she saved your life, you're saying that you had anxiety or stress from your time in World War II that you were dealing with mentally and emotionally?
Well, I think part of it wasn't, don't you think? Part of it was that, and part of it was I was going to these dances all the time, you know, and I don't know how much that would have lasted until I got maybe in trouble for some reason or another, you know, you don't know. So, but we've never left each other or anything, and Mary was actually the one that was more stable than I was, you know. She was ahead of me as far as emotions go and everything. She told me if I ever leave, she's going to take the car and the house and everything, and so I can't afford to go to the rescue mission anymore, you know. And so she,
You're going to hear about that one later, Fred.
Did I make a boo-boo?
Well, I know you made some memories because you two both got to go on an incredible journey recently thanks to Utah Honor Flight. You went to Washington, D.C., and you got to visit the World War II Memorial. What was that like for you all these years later to experience that?
Well, you know, it was really something that I wanted to see. And so when we got to the World War II Memorial, they had the states on the thing. I went up there, and we were just standing around talking, and some of the guys that were in the Marines were there, and they had been on Iwo Jima. And so we got to talking, and before long, we were all crying. And, you know, we got to talking to each other, and it's kind of, grown men shouldn't cry, I don't think. And yet we were there, you know, and it was really upsetting to hear these guys sit there and couldn't hardly talk. You know, the Marines and that. And even though I was in the Navy, we were all in the same situation there at Iwo Jima and Okinawa both. And so it was really emotional to be there and talk to those guys. You know, I mean, it was completely different.
And I want to hear anything that you have to share about it, but there's three things that I have on my mind that I'm awfully curious about what it meant to you. Three things that I know you saw, and one of them's there at the World War II Memorial. You mentioned the states. They have those pillars with the name of every state. They also have a wall of gold stars signifying the more than 400,000 Americans who didn't make it home. Standing there and looking at that, hearing that fountain behind you and just looking at it, what did it mean to you?
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, talking about it, and we all have the same feelings, you know, because we all went through the same situation, except the Marines. They were in a terrible situation. And when you talk to them and that, you know, and then they get emotional, pretty soon you get emotional too.
Sure. The Gold Stars was one. Another that seems particularly relevant to you, we were talking about Mount Suribachi and the flag, and I'm sure they take you to the Marine Corps Memorial, and you see that giant statue where if you walk around it, it looks like the flag is actually getting raised while you're there. What was that like since you had been there at the original?
Well, we didn't, I don't remember us stopping at. They just went by and the
around.
Flag, and they were showing the flag. And the one that kind of haunted me was the Korean.
There's a picture of you standing in front of those soldiers in the Korean War Memorial.
Yeah. I had a friend. He was in the Marine Corps at that Chosun Reservoir. They threw a grenade in, and he laid on it.
Wow.
And he lost both legs, and he had damaged all of his body part. And he lived across the street from us, and he rode with me to work because he'd got a job at the government, too. A lot of that haunts you, you know. I mean, can you imagine laying on a grenade to save three or four other guys? I mean, I can't do that. Well, so I might be able to do it because you're not thinking. You're just
right.
Doing what you're
you
reacting.
Never know until you're in that situation.
You're reacting.
So you thought of him at the Korean War Memorial. And speaking of selfless sacrifice, it strikes me, and I've been on these honor flight tours, and one of the parts of it, did you guys go to Arlington?
Yeah, we were talking about that this morning. We saw the Joe Louis thing and Lee Marvin.
Lee Marvin, the actor, and Joe Louis, the boxer, both buried there.
Yeah.
But so are a bunch of people that are not named. And you guys watched the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever talked to someone who had a real compelling connection to that Tomb of the Unknown, but it seems to me with that unidentified pilot who saved your ship, the Tomb of the Unknown had to be a pretty special place.
Well, you know, you always think about what a waste.
Mm.
It's like the men we're losing now. You just had hope it never happened, but it did.
When you guys came home, you were hoping no one else would ever have to deal with that again.
That's true, but I've always tell people that people talk about peace. And I don't think we'll ever have peace because when man first was able to throw a rock and hit somebody with a club, even fighting, there has never been, I read up on that stuff. You know, I've got books on it, and I watch the programs, and I read. And I don't know of any time in my lifetime have I ever seen real peace. And I don't think that if I live to be 300 years old, I'll ever see peace. And I'm not talking about big wars, but just everything, fighting all over, no matter, and people are losing their lives. And America is stepping right in and losing more than anybody else. You know, we're losing our soldiers and that, and Marines and sailors all the time.
Well, peace is one thing, but preserving freedom and establishing freedom and liberating persecuted countries is a different story, and you guys accomplished that in World War II. On the honor flight I'm curious what the most meaningful or satisfying or heartwarming element of that entire experience was for you.
Just meeting the guys. Just
the other
talking
veterans.
To them. And there wasn't one, I don't know of one grouchy guy in that group. I swear to God, they were all so. And Mike and them had that so well planned, and that, you know, everything was right on schedule and everything else. Just being with those that group was really enjoyable. And I, you know, I belong to a group that we meet every Wednesday. It's all veterans, and it's no service. It's all services. And we just talk about things and talk about your experiences and things like that. I wouldn't have found out about the Honor Flight if I hadn't gone to those meetings and they told me about it. I wouldn't have known about it. Mm-hmm. And several of those guys had gone on those flights, and they told us about it, what it was.
How was your reception when you got back to Salt Lake?
Oh, you can't believe it. You can't believe it. If you do those things, you've got to warn the people to be at the airports to greet these guys. I mean, because that is uplifting to go through those airports and have them people applauding for you and saying things to you and everything. I mean, in my own mind, I think Utah is ahead of a lot of, I'll say areas, for vets. They have things going for the vets here all the time, like at the legislature the other day.
Yeah, you were just at the state capitol in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and everybody, they were glad to see you. They were all glad to see you. They shake your hand and everything else, and it kind of makes you feel pretty good that there are areas and there are people that feel that way.
Does that make you feel like what you did mattered?
Yeah, it does. Because there for a long time, World War II vets, there was nothing happening. You didn't hear about hardly anything except on Veterans Day or something like that. But you never heard anything. Up here, you hear about it all the time. I mean, it's always brought up. And I'm glad Utah feels that way, because we're going to be gone pretty soon.
Well, that's why this show is here, so we can get it. So those of us who weren't around have an idea of what you did, and I want to make sure I say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us about it. Is there anything that, when you think back on it, that you're most proud of or you think is most important for us to understand today?
Well, most of what I'm proud of is what's happened in private, you know, life. My father was in World War I. I had a great-great-grandfather that was killed in the Civil War. My brother was in the Air Force. He was a crew chief. My other brother was over there in the Pacific the same time I was. He was on a destroyer, the Callahan. Hmm. And my brother-in-law was out there. So my family has kind of been in these things, you know, not all wars, but just in service things. And no, I'm kind of proud of the way I lived. I haven't done anything wrong. I've always tried to play it straight. And I've had a happy marriage, and I enjoy that.
Is there something about your generation and the way America was 70 years ago that you think we could benefit from today?
Unity. Don't fight. I mean, what's all of this about, you know? I mean, it worries me, this country, sometimes about our military is, I don't think, as strong as it should be. We can't get along. We can't make a decision. We can't do this and we can't do that. Why just can't we get together and get it over with? And, you know, America could be like some of the other countries that went down, because of this, you know, not being organized, or, you know, and things like that. It just bothers me that we can't settle all of this. I just hope that we can find peace.
You and me both, my friend. Thank you for sharing from the heart today. You can find photos of Fred at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. We're out of time for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.